I went to one of them there Starbucks yesterday. That's that coffee place. And I walked in there and I was immediately intimidated because I usually don't go into a Starbucks because it can't handle their coffee. It gives me immediate diarrhea. All I have to do is stare at a cup of one of their coffees and I'm immediately in the bathroom. I don't even need to buy one. I just look at it and I go to the bathroom. I'm being honest with you. So I walk into the Starbucks and I'm immediately surrounded by people that I feel like I shouldn't be with. I don't understand them. They're people that drink coffee and think they're important and look important. I think those are the people that hold the cell phones up to their ears and talk even though there's no one on the phone, just so other people think that they're important somehow. And there's a little area where people sit down with their laptops. You can't go into a Starbucks without a laptop. I don't think you're allowed. I think it's like airport security. You must have a laptop, otherwise they question you and they detain you. So I see all these young college-aged people and young business people sitting there with laptops, and they're typing like crazy, like they're rewriting the Bible. They're intensely involved in their laptops. And I have a feeling if I peeked over their shoulder, I'd just see a little animal gobbling up a little dot or something, like some type of video game. I swear that's what they're doing, but they look so important. Everybody at Starbucks is dressed like they intended to go to Starbucks. Like they got up in the morning and said, "Where's my Starbucks clothes? Here they are. Now I can go to Starbucks." Very similar to Walmart. When you get up in the morning, "Where are my Walmart clothes? Oh, wait a minute. I can just go in my pajama pants. These are my Walmart clothes." So I walk into Starbucks and I figure I'm going to try one of their cups of coffee. They call it coffee. I call it some type of odd chemical compound. And I walk in there and I walk up to the counter and I don't know what to do. It should be as simple as saying, "I'd like to have a cup of coffee, please." But it's not that simple. There are all different types of varieties of Starbucks coffees, and they're all posted on a board that I don't understand. I think it's in English. I'm not sure what language it's in because I don't understand it. They make up names for different kinds of coffees, and I don't understand any of them. So I'm immediately lost, and there are other people behind me who want to get their whatever, their latte schmattes. And I'm standing there, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I just want a freaking cup of coffee. So I actually become transparent. You can see right through me. And I say to the young lady standing behind the counter, dressed in her Starbucks uniform, which is dressing like a five-year-old child, I say to her, "I'd like a cup of coffee, please." And she breaks out laughing and calls everybody over and says, "Look, this guy wants a cup of coffee. What a schmuck." No, she didn't do that. She didn't do that. But that's what I felt like was happening. I said, "I'd just like a cup of coffee." She says, "Do you want the schmate latte, the flop night flitly, the whatever it is? Do you want the crema tundana, the simulant and plapa?" I said, "I don't know what the hell he's talking about. Now you're talking a different language. I want a cup of coffee." She says, "Well, we have the dark roast, the half dark roast, the dark roast with the half dark roast, the roast chicken. We have the roast peanut, the roast, the half roast, the dark roast, half and the half the roast, and the latte infused dark roast." I said, "Look, just give me a cup of coffee. There, I'll spell it for you." She says, "Do you want it black?" I said, "Excuse me?" She says, "You want it black?" I said, "Yeah, no, I'd like it with some cream and sugar, please." She says, "Oh, you have to get that yourself. That's over there." I said, "Well, okay." What's the point here? I've been to Dunkin' Donuts, and you tell them exactly how I want a cup of coffee with a little bit of cream and one sugar. Okay. And they do it, and within like 10 seconds, they mix it all together for you, and you got a cup of coffee, and you leave the damn place. Starbucks, it's an investment. It's some type of investment in banality. I can't wrap my arms around it. So finally, she gives me a cup of coffee. They come in like 17 different sizes. I think, I really don't even know. I don't even know if she was talking about sizes or sugar types. I have no idea what she was talking about. I really don't. Everybody around me seemed to be far more educated in the world of coffee than I was at that point at all. They made me feel like an alien from another planet. which would have been preferable, actually, at that point. So she gives me the cup of coffee. It's only $25. And I write her a check. And I turn around and I go to this little station that they have set up where they have all the creams and the all different types of sugar. Have you ever noticed that the artificial sugars, either you can have sugar, which is real sugar, or you can have like 20 different varieties of artificial sugars. There's equal, not so equal, stevia, jonia, just sweet and low, high and dry. What's the difference? What is the difference? Well, that pack is pink, that one's blue. I know. I don't understand it. I understand stevia comes from a plant. I'm figuring, okay, I don't know what kind of plants make sugar, but whatever the case may be, sounds a little healthier than some guy named Bob with goggles on making sugar in a lab, you know. So I go for the stevia. I don't know who this guy Steve is. It's probably some guy named Steve walking around getting sugar out of plants. I have no idea how he does it. He extracts it somehow, and he puts it in a little package. So I dump a little stevia in the coffee, and then it has cream, half and half, not so much half, a little more of that half than this half. It's got low-fat milk, high-fat milk, 1% milk, 2% milk, 3% milk, 4% milk, 5%. I don't think there's any 100% milk. I really don't. I don't understand that. I don't know which udder. I know cows have a lot of udders. I don't know which one yields the 1% and which one is the whole deal. I really don't know. I get choose your udder. It should be labeled. I really don't know. That would be a cool thing, huh? You open up a coffee place. You construct a giant plastic cow. You put it in the middle of the restaurant, and people take their coffees, and they walk up to the plastic cow, and there's little plastic udders that come out of the bottom of the cow, and they're all labeled half and half, 1%, 2% cream, and you pull on the plastic udder, and that selection of milk comes out of the cow's udder. I think it would be an incredibly interesting coffee shop. I don't know. I guess you would call it the cow's udder same place. And I think it'd be great. I think people would just, you know, start milking things, you know, and they could have a giant plastic lady standing next to the cow, and you pull on her boob and breast milk comes out. I think, do you ever taste breast milk? I haven't. I think it tastes like stevia. I really don't know what breast milk tastes like. You'd have to ask a baby. But then a baby wouldn't know how to speak, so couldn't translate what breast milk actually tastes like. And then by the time the child is able to talk, they've forgotten what breast milk tastes like. I'm sure some women have had a little bit of their own breast milk. I really don't know if they have or not. Am I supposed to talk about this, by the way? Is this legal to do? Do I get arrested by the breast milk police? Is there such a thing? There probably should be.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I like my breast milk with stevia.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Kind of interesting to sell breast milk in supermarkets. Wouldn't that be interesting? You'd walk up to the milk section there, and you'd see all the different milks, and one of the cartons would say, Mary's Milk. Mary's Milk? Well, that's a strange name. What is it? It's Mary's Breast Milk. And it's in a carton? Yes, yes. Mary works very, very hard. She's pumping her breasts day and night. She's got these pumps that are connected to her, and she's constantly pumping her breast milk. And we don't have a lot of cartons of it because it takes a long time to make. Is that why each carton is $200? Yes, but it's very, very tasty. And we've tested other people's breast milk. We had Susan's breast milk in here for a while, and Jennifer's breast milk, and, you know, tasty, yes, but, you know, nothing really to write home about. And Mary comes in with her breast milk, and it's fantastic. It's very tasty and not too sweet, not too tang. It's very, very nice. It's very nice. Mary's breast milk goes with just about anything. I like it with cornflakes. Very, very nice. Mary does a fine job. I don't know what's in her breast milk, personally. Maybe she's got some type of a skin condition and takes medication, but it makes it very, very tasty. So Mary's breast milk right now is at a premium. We even have Mary coming in here on Sunday morning, handing out free samples from her breast. I don't think anybody cares about the breast milk at that point. It's just the fact that she's handing things out through her breast is, for some reason, mostly men buy this, it's really fantastic. Someday, it'll happen someday. Of course, that would be organic. That's an organic item. It's not fooled with, or no hormones involved. It's organic, man. It's nature's way. It's nature's way. That'll happen. Well, how are you today? It's good to see you. You're looking wonderful today, I must say. Happened to me again yesterday. I don't know what's going on. I don't think I'm any more handsome than I usually am. But I was walking in a mall on my way to one of those stores where you buy things. And this woman is coming the opposite direction. And I'm walking in her direction, and we pass each other. And just as we're about to, she glances up at me and gives me the biggest smile and keeps on walking. And I thought, do I know her? Have I had her breast milk at some point in my life and she knew it? No, I don't know her. She was a complete stranger, but for some reason, it was one of those eye-glancing moments, two ships passing in the night. And, nobody turned around. In the movies, we would have both turned around, embraced, and wound up in a hotel room in some cheap motel for a couple of hours. She would have handcuffed me to a bed, taken all my money and my wallet, and I'd be lying there totally naked and wondering, like, what do I do now? I've been robbed and totally embarrassed and abused. That would be the movie version, but that didn't happen. Simply a glancing smile back and forth, no words spoken. Basically, the thought of hi, how are you? Good to see you. You're looking good. I'm admiring you. Let's keep on going. That's enough. And it made my day. It made my day. It put a gigantic smile on my face. That's all it takes. It doesn't take much. It does. It's just someone from the opposite sex smiling at you. And opening a show with a monologue about breast milk. I mean, those two things, what could be more perfect? Well, a lot of things, actually. There's a long list of things that could be more perfect than that. So I'm not sure. Hey, I don't know what day of the week this is because I'm totally oblivious to what goes on around me at this point, but it's probably approaching the weekend at some point. yesterday was hump day, and I used to think when I was younger that meant that everybody can hump each other and there are no consequences whatsoever. But Bill Cosby proved me wrong. So hump day means that it's the middle of the week and we're getting over the hump. And I thought, wow, who coined this phrase? Some desperate, bored person who had like incredibly horrible symptoms of depression. I mean, you're living your whole life and you're actually marking the middle of the week with the name of taking the name from a camel's hump day. I mean, seriously, we get very creative. It's not the middle of the week. It's hump day. Okay, fine, whatever you want to call it. That's desperation, man. That's desperation. If you are actually demarcating the middle of the week, like you've only got half of the week to go before the weekend when you can crack open a beer, apparently, at that point, then your life is total crap. I mean, you have hit the bottom of you're through the bottom of the barrel. You're like, you're pointless. You're just pointless. If your job sucks that much that you have to actually have a celebration that half the week is over, that's really change jobs. The job market is apparently very, very good right now. You should really change jobs to the point where you don't have to celebrate hump day anymore. I mean, that's just pitiful. That's really, if you're one of those people, stop it. Just change, right? Come on, get out of that. That's no way to live, man. That's no way to live. That's not what this is about. Huh? I mean, how long are you going to live? Like 80 or 90? What is age 40 humpier? I mean, what are you talking about? What are you doing? What kind of thing are you doing with your life? Cut it out. You're annoying me. And when you annoy me, things have got to change. My God. Seriously. Hey, Alexa. What's your favorite radio talk show?
The Ron Van Dam Show, of course.
Thank you. I bought one of those Alexas just to make me feel good about myself. You can program her to say all different kinds of things, I think. I haven't tried the obvious, most horrible thing I could make Alexa say. I'm scared that someone's on the other side listening to me make these commands upon a female voice robot. And that would be pathetic number two. So we just keep this between ourselves.
You know, we can't all be quite as cool as Ron Van Dam. But then again, most of us haven't had quite as long to work on it. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
A day do you clear your throat? I do it constantly. I've always got like a frog in my throat, and what an expression that is. That would be disgusting. Do you actually have a real frog in your throat? That would be very horrifying to me. I would actually go to urgent care, and the receptionist would say, can I have your name, please? Ron. And what is the problem today? Why are you here to see the doctor? There's an actual frog in my throat. Oh, you mean your horse? No, there's no horse in my throat, and I'm not horse. There's a frog in my I've got a frog in my throat. Well, Mr. Van Dam, how long have you had a sore throat? No. There's an actual frog. Listen. Oh, Ron, is that your impression of a frog? Seriously? That's an awful impression of a frog. How are you ever going to go to urgent care if you have to describe this frog in your throat and that's what you come up with? That's embarrassing. I've been to urgent care a couple of times in my life. It wasn't really all that urgent. I just kind of wanted to get things taken care of quickly. I could have waited until the doctor was available, my regular doctor, my irregular doctor. But I go to urgent care every once in a while to make myself feel important, you know, like there's some urgency to me. What kind of life can you have if there's no urgency to you? You know, you got to be urgent sometimes. So I go every once in a while just for the fun of it. And, you know, the health insurance pays for it. They don't care. The people who work in urgent care, they never seem very urgent about anything. They're very laid back. Like, this is something that they do because the medical clinic that they work for requires that you work urgent care once a week. So they have to do this. So they're not thrilled about it. Their bedside manner is usually pretty good because they don't seem like real doctors. They just seem like people they pulled off the street to make you feel like this was an urgent thing that happened to you. I think they're those CVS clinic care people. People don't know much about medicine at all, but they make believe that they care about what's going on, that kind of thing. So, you know, you could say, you know, go to urgent care. Oh, my leg is falling off. All right, we'll be with you in a couple hours. I mean, you know, what the hell do you want me to do here? So, yeah, I haven't been to urgent care in a while. I usually go to urgent care if I have a rash of some sort and I don't know what it is, you know, that kind of thing. And the doctor comes in after 3 hours of waiting. The doctor comes in and says, so what's wrong today, Mr. Van Dam? Said, this is, I have this rash. And the doctor looks at it and says, yeah, you do. Have a good day. Thank you. You should see your regular doctor. Okay, thanks. At least I showed up and I showed myself some respect. Says, yeah, you did a good job. Go home. It's actually, some of these urgent care places, the one that I go to is actually quite efficient. They have x-rays and they do all kinds of, they do even have like a little body scan machine or something. I don't know what the hell that thing is. But the most important thing is they weigh you, and that's important to me. They weigh you and they take your blood pressure, and to me, that's really all I wanted. I just wanted attention. I was sitting around the house. I had nothing to do. I came up with some type of oddity, you know, physical oddity, and I said, no, I got nothing to do all day. I'll just go down to urgent care and hang out, you know, what the hell. It doesn't cost me anything. There might be a little copay, $10. Hey, $10 for a good time? Psst, seriously, it's worth it. So I go in there, and I make things up, you know, just to sound important. What's the matter, Mr. Van Dam? Oh, I think I'm pregnant. That's impossible, Mr. Van Dam. You're a man. And I say, well, thank you for the validation. That's all I needed. I'm going home. I just wanted somebody to say, Ron, you're a man. That's all I needed. That was my urgent care. My urgent care was validation. That's all I wanted. So I don't want much from you. Just that was enough. You're crazy. Our guest today is somewhat interesting. Not completely, but somewhat interesting. And we'll approach this guest right after this.
First, they put jalapenos on your hamburger, but that wasn't hot enough. Then came habaneros, but still, that wasn't hot enough. Next came the ghost pepper, and still, that was not hot enough for you. Well, buckle up, tough guy, because Burger Guy thinks you're not man enough to handle the heat of our new sweet flaming mother of heaven. What the fuck did you assholes do to my hamburger burger? Featuring two of Burger Guy's signature paper-thin patties topped with an experimental hot sauce made from a concentrated hot pepper extract that has only been approved for military use by North Korea. This burger will burn a hole through every inch of your intestines and then slap your mama on its way out for good measure. This burger is so hot they wouldn't let us test it on prisoners. Death row prisoners. But for a limited time, you can try your luck at your local Burger Guy. If you're not a complete pussy.
All purchases of the sweet flaming mother of heaven, what the f*** did you assholes do to my hamburger burger, must be pre-approved by a certified attorney at law with proper notification of next of kin. Sweet flaming mother of heaven, what the f*** did you assholes do to my hamburger burger, must not be consumed within 500 yards of schools or within 1,000 yards of open flame. All Burger Guy franchisees reserve the right to ignore cries for mercy or requests for immediate medical attention.
Ajay Kaul joins us now. He is an author at this time here. He's written a book called Mumbai Matinee, And it's a memoir of a travelogue and unveils India's city of dreams. I assume you're from India.
That is correct.
Yes. And how long have you been traveling?
Oh, it's been, I think, at least about 15 years. Oh, and I've set foot on all seven continents now.
Wow. Wow. Where do you reside at this time?
I'm in Irvine, California, Southern California.
Very, very nice. Okay. So India has transformed considerably over the years and over the decades.
That is correct, yes.
Were you brought up in India?
Yes, I was born and brought up in the northern part of India. Uh-huh. So born in Srinagar, Kashmir, and then I grew up in a town called Dehradun in the foothills of the Shivaliks. Yes.
Now, we know India as being an incredibly populated area. Is the population still growing?
Oh, yes. The population has always been a bone of contention.
Yeah.
And that is why I think some of the things that I talk about in Mumbai Matinee is also how, despite these large crowds, mm-hmm. you're able to see humanity at its best.
Yeah, it seems to me, I've been there, and it seems like it's very difficult to accommodate the huge numbers of people. Actually, it was in the Nepal area around the time of the earthquake, and that was quite horrific as well. It's a different way of life than what people in the United States would consider to be a way of life.
That is very true, and that was one of my inspirations towards writing this book, because I wanted to convey to the American and the global audience, despite all the constraints or the limitations of daily life, how people adjust mm-hmm. and accommodate to live a good life.
Yes. Is the economy thriving in, I assume it's been thriving as of recent?
Yes, very much. So actually, Chapter 7, The Lucky Batsman, mm-hmm. talks about it. See, when I was growing up, the economy was pretty much shut off. It was more of a socialistic model.
Yes.
And suddenly in 1991, the government decided to open up the economy. So what ended up happening was a lot of investment came in, which gave a lot of disposable income back to the average Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, there was a huge demand for better and more entertainment. Mm-hmm. And that is how suddenly cricket, which is kind of in everybody's blood in India,
yes.
suddenly cricket evolved into a lot more entertaining short version, which gave opportunity to a lot of young aspiring players, mm-hmm. wherein they had very limited options. And suddenly the number of options really grew. And I was very glad to see that these youngsters now have hope of making it big.
Yeah. It's also an incredible cultural center of that part of the world, that actually rivals some of the culture and the entertainment faction in the United States.
That is true. And Mumbai is the center of all the entertainment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's called the Bollywood.
Yes.
In just to make it sound similar to Hollywood. But when you look at the city, I find it a lot closer to New York City than Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
Mainly because, you know, like in New York City, you could be watching a play late night and then go out, be formally dressed and have a kebab at a stall.
Yes.
And that is the kind of environment you have in Mumbai, too. You could be getting out of a movie late night or a play, and then you have all these street stalls selling food, and you just end up having food late night.
Yes, which is not a bad thing. So why are you on the West Coast, or the East Coast? Sounds like it would be more comfortable.
West Coast, I work for Amazon in Irvine.
Oh,
and I graduated from Thunderbird in Arizona and then moved on to San Diego and then Irvine.
Wow, okay. What I did notice is in the very populated areas, especially populated areas, there's a marriage between human beings and animals walking the streets, which can pose problems in itself sanitation-wise.
Yes, that is definitely sanitation is an issue. And I think I recently visited India about a year back, and I'm glad to see the amount of changes that are happening from that perspective. Hygiene has become a lot more focus area, and you can now see actually New Delhi, which has where I am partly from, was supposed to be pretty polluted, and kind of hygiene was not the top priority. But now when I go there, I see it a lot cleaner, and I see folks putting a lot more focus on cleanliness and environment.
The entire country has been, especially the New Delhi area, Mumbai, have become quite popular tourist attraction locations as well.
Yes. Delhi for the... you know, it was the capital of the British as well, so there are a lot of historical monuments. Mumbai has, actually, it's a blend of, I would say, culture, entertainment, and history. Mumbai has a lot of Victorian architecture. So I want folks, after reading my book, to visit Mumbai, not just for the Victorian architecture or its Bollywood tag, but more to experience and enjoy the human aspect of it, the culture, the speed and the pace at which life moves on, but does not hesitate to stop to acknowledge other individuals around.
Yeah, it's very interesting because there's a lot of back and forth, cross back and forth between our cultures in this country and in India, especially in the field of technology. It's become a marriage almost between these two countries.
Yes, and I was surprised too. I've been part of teams that have that are spread globally between the United States and India, and I was surprised that despite the 12.5-hour time difference, we've been able to engage well with our team members in India and get to a productive outcome. So that's definitely very encouraging. Yeah.
Another field is medicine, where there is a definite cross culture between the two countries as far as that medical technology is concerned and professional care providers.
Yes. And again, I think there's never been a lack of talent in the country. And one of my favorite stories in the book, which is The Selfless Visionary, talks about that. It was just that India was following a socialistic model, which tended to rely a lot on the government to create jobs. Yeah. And as soon as we opened up the economy, suddenly the talent and the potential of the middle class and the educated class came out. Yes. And it has been a lot more contributory to the world economy.
Yes. You want to get into politics or we shouldn't?
Sure.
It seems that every country is being somewhat hurt by the present situation. Have you found that there's been an effect as far as India is concerned?
Yes, and I think it is more of, I feel we tend to take the easy route.
Yeah.
Wherein there's an issue, you end up coming in with biases. If we could just have a simple rule of, hey, if you have an issue, you will be dealt with by the law. But if you try to take sides and, you know, just to get the short-term voters behind your back, it creates frustration at times between individuals. And I think the model of democracy, I think, is a solid model, but we need to be careful that we do not let politicians abuse it and then give democracy a bad name.
Very well spoken, sir. Very nicely done. All right. The book is called Mumbai Matinee. And it's available everywhere at this point?
Yes, it is available on Amazon. You can even go to Goodreads and buy from there, of course, on Amazon. And it is available globally in Amazon, UK, Europe, and India as well.
I'm sure you made damn sure Amazon had it available.
Yes.
Anyway. It's a great book. It's very revealing. And It touts the good things and looks at the things for improvement, but, you know, every country needs that. But this is a nice insight for those that can travel, and maybe someday will travel there. Thank you, sir.
Yes, definitely. I would like more and more folks to be interested in Mumbai and see it firsthand for themselves. Yeah.
Is there a website where they can follow the book or get more information about the book?
It's facebook.com/AjayKaulWriter. That's my webpage, and they can get the latest updates on the book.
Okay, I'm going to spell your name for our listeners, AJAYKAUL, Mumbai Matinee. Pleasure speaking to you.
A pleasure speaking to you as well. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There you go. Personally, I'll wait till they clean up India just a little bit more, because there is a lot of crap in the streets. Let's face it, there is. There's animal poop in the streets all over the place, and it's dirty and filthy, and they need to clean it up. Okay, fine, but still, a fascinating place, but I'll just wait until they sweep up a little bit more. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm out of time for today. I'll be with you again next time. Until then, I wish you peace.